We are at war now. If you're using fiat currencies, you're subject to violence already. I got a DM from a guy who had escaped Venezuela and thanked me for an article because I've inspired him to memorize 12 words across a border.
That's awesome.
Here I am babbling on the internet from my bedroom, and I'm changing a life here on the other side of the earth. The more people that free themselves from the shackles of their self-proclaimed leaders, the better. It can't happen fast enough, in my opinion. Because Bitcoin removes violence from the equation. That's what Bitcoin does. So it's poetic justice in a way, because the worse your government has been in the past at managing money, the more likely you are to discover Bitcoin faster.
What does a transition look like into a Bitcoin world?
Down a rabbit hole.
Down.
Cypherpunk.
Rabbit.
Welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunk. I'm here with Dees Knoots, and we are here to discuss the chapter in his book called Transition, about his gender transition.
To discuss. Yeah.
We're here to discuss his gender transition.
Dees Knoots are disgusting.
Dees Knoots. So this is actually the final chapter, I believe, of our series. I think we'll do one more episode after just to summarize everything.
Yep.
But what does a transition look like into a Bitcoin world? We touched a little bit lightly on this in a previous episode when we talked about adoption. But how does this play out?
That's the million sat question, isn't it? Like, it's super hard to foresee.
I want to hear your two sets on this.
There's so much to unpack here. I think when you realize what Bitcoin really is and that it lives within us, because it's just that you can't even own them. All you can do is keep a secret from someone else. That means, to me, when I dissect that, it means like the success, since we are our Satoshis, we're not all Satoshi, but we're all Satoshis. If we own our own keys, which means that we as Bitcoiners, we are all incentivized to help one another and be awesome to one another, because the success of Bitcoin is the success of other Bitcoiners. So I'm incentivized to help you. You're incentivized to help me, which is what we're doing right now, by the way. Mm-hmm. So, and we also have this, since the sats are finite, you will get closer to the psychological insight that which you can do without your own, meaning that you will prioritize quality over quantity. So we're going into a world of abundance where people still don't want to overconsume because they value their satoshis more than shit, more than others, more than stuff, where everyone is awesome to one another all the time. And if you're in Bitcoin, if you're deep into Bitcoin, and if you're in, especially in Bitcoin maxi circles, I'd say, like, to people who are deep into this particular part of the rabbit hole, then you already experience this. I experience it on a daily basis. I try to live that way. I try to collaborate with as many ethically aligned Bitcoiners as possible, and form new friendships and relationships and bonds with Bitcoin companies and podcasters and conferences and whatnot. And it's just been, it's like that Guns N' Roses song, It's So Easy, because it really is. Like, once you tap into to that and see the power of it, there's no turning back, because it's giving back so much. It's really mind-blowing.
Max Keiser, the intro to Larry's book I read recently. It was really, really, really good the way he described it. It was like, you know, if you, as a Bitcoiner, when you become a Bitcoiner and you own Bitcoin, you know, all these people, Michael Saylor, everybody else is like, you know, they work for you now. That was kind of the point that he made in the intro.
Yeah.
It was actually really like thought provoking idea, whereas like, hey, yeah, we're all in this together. You know, it's rules without rulers, but we're all part of this system. I think that's the beautiful part of this next phase of the internet, which is, you know, Web3, of this idea of like being able to have true ownership of the protocol. You know, Web1 was kind of information was like, it was the beginning of like information kind of going out there, and like everybody kind of, could access information freely. But you didn't necessarily own the information. Web 2 was kind of like the rise of these huge mega corporations where they own everything and you are the product, and you know they own you can use the network, but like you're permissioned and like gated. And then Web 3, Bitcoin is like the beginning, I think, of this idea of really being able to own part of the protocol itself and be a part of that protocol itself. Like you say, the sats are like in your brain, right?
Yeah.
Like you own the information of the network of those private keys.
I have a slightly different perspective, and I personally wouldn't use the term Web3 or ownership of a protocol, because that's not like you don't even own information. Like either information is knowledge. Like in Bitcoin, knowing is owning.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can act as if you own it, if you know it, like, and that's what makes the Satoshi special. But I don't think that's applicable to anything else but the Satoshi, really, because everything else is copyable. Even within Bitcoin, like, you don't own a part of the protocol.
But by owning the Satoshis, that's part of the network. It's part of the protocol, right? That information. And you have the secret key that. You own that little Satoshi.
Yeah, and you have a say in the future of the protocol if you run your own node. I guess you could call that owning.
Mm-hmm.
But I view it more as a way to communicate than anything else. It's like not the... And I don't see the internet itself changing... like, to me, decentralization is a word that gets thrown around a lot. Like, and... For me, it's just an unfortunate means to a greater end.
Mm-hmm.
And this we need it in Bitcoin because it's the only way to make sure that the money printer can't be taken over by one entity.
Mm-hmm.
It's what allows for this. Like, it would have been much better if we didn't need decentralization.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an unfortunate means to a greater end, and that greater end is absolutely finite, sound, permissionless, censorship-resistant money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the beautiful thing, not the decentralization itself. Like, decentralization and centralization aren't inherently good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think hierarchies are very good for certain structures. A company, for instance, workers' control of factories didn't really work out for the Russians. Like, I like a hierarchical system where there's a boss and levels of management. And I think that's how successful organizations will operate in the future too. I don't think that's inherently bad. So to me, like, decentralization is this thing that is, unfortunately, it's needed in Bitcoin. And but what it allows for is this incorruptible type of money, and that in itself, since you can trade money for absolutely everything else on Earth, then you get into this utopian world where we crave less and have more.
Interesting. Have you thought about the transition? Like, obviously, there are places like El Salvador, Nigeria, where Bitcoin adoption is growing much faster than other places. How do you see that playing out in the future? Do you think that transition will occur much more quickly in certain places and as other...
Yes, it's poetic justice in a way, because the worse your government has been in the past at managing money, the more likely you are to discover Bitcoin faster.
There is something poetic about that.
There is some poetic justice there. And Africa being the obvious example, and South America too, for that for that matter, there are a lot of people there that have been screwed over by their government over and over again. And people are desperate in some of these places. Last year I was in Buenos Aires, which is hopeful nowadays with Milei and the so-called ANCAP president, which is oxymoronic. But anyway, sadly, I met a lot of confused people there that saw shit coins and stable coins as being some sort of long-term solution to Argentina's problems. And of course, stable coins tied to the US dollar is better than the Argentinian peso.
Hyperinflating.
But it's still worse than Bitcoin. It's just that these people have maybe they have inherently have a shorter time horizon because they have less resources to personally to be able to adopt Bitcoin and HODL for a long time. They just I just see that all the shitcoinery and all the confusion and all this like this urge to have stable coins and to have dollars. That's like it's a product of a higher time preference than what you can afford if you have a lower time preference and you get Bitcoin. Having said that, I still think they have a head start in since they've already seen how bad hyperinflation is. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the first things that made me kept me writing was that one of the articles before I even published my first book. I got a DM from a guy who had escaped Venezuela and thanked me for an article because I had inspired him to memorize 12 words across a border.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
And that's just, it was mind blowing to me. Here I'm writing some I'm babbling on the internet from my bedroom and I'm changing a life here on the other side of the earth. And it's a very, you know, humbling yet like made me proud kind of moment. Like maybe I should take this a bit more seriously and write and do this more. And I did.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's amazing. Yeah, I when it really like stuck with me, like how, you know, cryptocurrency in general, this idea of you know, having a digital money, I guess, that's just completely digital. Because in our brains, we still kind of think of fiat money as like, oh, it's physical, right? You can touch it because it's like this mind fuck. But I was playing a video game. I think I've told the story in the past. I don't remember when, but I was playing a online video game and like the currency in the game, somebody was in my guild, my group, and they were from Venezuela. They were leaving Venezuela, but like they weren't able to like get dollars and like do the whole thing. So what they would use was like WhatsApp, and there's the currency. This is like blew my mind. So the currency that's in this artificial world in the game, we use these like these jewels that they're kind of rare. Like the game designers made a money that's like kind of like, you know, fiat money where it's like it falls all the time. It's plentiful, but like nobody actually uses that as money. They use these more rare like jewels.
Items in the game.
Yeah, well, the item is like a jewel that drops from a month. Yeah. Like but it's rare. It doesn't happen often. And it also has like deflationary characteristics where like you can use it on items and it disappears. So there's a natural kind of burn mechanism built into it. Yeah. But I remember this. And you can stack them all together, so they're kind of like, you know, you can put 50 of them together in this little stack, so it doesn't take up much space. So people use that as money, right, in the game for real, for items and whatnot. And you know, the developers, they'll fucking duplicate them and do funny business and shit.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows what's happening, but still, it works better than like the fiat money of Venezuela. So one of the guys was leaving Venezuela, and he's like coming to the guild, and he's like, "Hey, I need to buy a bunch of these jewels. Can somebody help me out here?" So what he did was literally buy these fucking jewels in this game, like thousands of them, you know, and he went on a plane, went to the U.S., logged into the game, and then sold them in the U.S. for U.S.
dollars.
Fucking crazy, right? Isn't that insane?
Yeah. No, but it's it is insane.
Yeah.
And so many things are worth more than money, like as a medium of exchange.
So it was just very interesting.
Another early article of mine was about World of Warcraft gold.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because like around the same time that I first heard of Bitcoin, I also heard of entire offices, in entire floors of skyscrapers in China with people just farming World of Warcraft gold.
So Phil, you saw in the other room, he used to do that.
He had
a room like this and they're just full of computers and he would do these different things and these different, I don't think it was just World of Warcraft, it was some other games too.
That's
what he did.
This was specifically about World of Warcraft. It applies to any other similar type of game. And I realized that Bitcoin, this is more akin to the dollar than to Bitcoin, because Blizzard would release an expansion and that whole game got completely fucked up because now the rules changed.
The rules changed, yeah.
And they did that quite often to prevent people from buying and selling accounts between one another and buying and selling gold but because they didn't want to connect their in-game gold to a real-world resource,
which is blows my mind.
But I think the reason they didn't want that is because of all the financial regulation and regulatory stuff that they would have to do if that was the case.
I mean, I don't think they should get involved, but they should let the market be, like let people do it.
Absolutely, the financial regulation makes no sense, like at all. Like let people get fucked over. Like
yeah.
It only speeds up the betterness of mankind. Anyway, so I wrote the article about, hang on, World of Warcraft gold. Bitcoin is not like World of Warcraft gold. The dollar is like World of Warcraft gold because the Fed can also change the game at will whenever they want. Like Bitcoin is so that's why I don't like the term digital currency, because first of all, it's not a currency. It's money. It's a Satoshi is a bearer asset. It's more akin to a bearer asset. Like I said before, it's just information. But it's more akin to a bearer asset than to currency, which is a receipt for something or a fake receipt for something. And so is World of Warcraft gold. It's also this. Mm-hmm. It's like Monopoly money. Another funny thing is, and this is in Clown World, about Monopoly money. If you get your hands on the first edition of the game Monopoly, mm-hmm. the game and the money are actually worth more than real dollars.
Isn't that wild?
And it's so telling. And there's another story about like how this works, like, and why I don't believe in shitcoins, since they can change the rules at any point. Mm-hmm. There might be like slightly more secure than fiat money, but still, if there isn't this robust thing around it, then so the example is with the famous painters of the last century in Europe. So there's a story about Salvador Dali that he ran into another car, had a car accident in France, and the other guy, French guy, walks out and oh putain merde mon dieu, he's all pissed at Salvador for wrecking his car, but then Salvador brings out a permanent marker and signs the car, and all of a sudden it's worth more than new because it was an actual Salvador Dalí sculpture now.
And
apparently these painters...
Is that a real story?
It is a real story.
A true story?
Yeah, that's allegedly.
That's amazing.
It's good enough to put in the book. And also, there were these painters, they realized that they could make their restaurant receipts more valuable by just signing them than paying them. So the restaurant started accepting signed receipts instead of money. And then they sold these signatures.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that.
But they did it too much. So they inflated the supply and all of a sudden it wasn't worth anything.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
And it's such a good illustration for... it can be applied to all other types mm-hmm. of currency as well. If it can be inflated, it will.
I was just fascinated to watch the in-game stuff of like watching these virtual worlds and seeing what arose as money, which is not what the developers of the game wanted you to use intended. It's very similar to how gold was money for so long. Yeah. Gold arose naturally, but why, right? You understand those.
Did you hear about the disease that spread in World of Warcraft? There was some curse or something, or an actual disease in the game.
No, really?
And the developers had fucked up. So all of a sudden, the orc capital city, Orgrimmar, was plagued with with this virus that made everyone die over and over again. And when they're resurrected, they still had the virus.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, so they had to fix that in a patch or something.
Oh, that's
crazy. Back to Richard Dawkins and memes. Mm-hmm. This in-game events like that are memes.
Yeah.
Like games are ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And good ideas survive and bad ideas die. So I guess that's what happens to in-game currencies and in-game phenomena in general also.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Tell me about Cipolla's laws of human stupidity.
Yeah, how
do stupid people control smart people?
Through democracy.
Through democracy.
So Cipolla. This is an old Italian economist in the 70s, I believe. Maybe I'm wrong there, but anyway, we don't know if this theory is like a mock theory or a real one, but it has some validity, I think. So he has this grid with four corners of a grid, or a matrix, with stupid people, intelligent people. What are the other two? I don't remember what he calls the other two categories, but there's an x-axis and a y-axis, and on the y-axis is good for yourself and bad for yourself, and on the x-axis is same thing, good for others and bad for others. So stupid people are bad for themselves and bad for others, and intelligent geniuses are good for themselves and good for others. And then you have the psychopaths, which are good for themselves, but at the detriment of others. And then you have the workhorses, I believe, that are good for others, but not for themselves. So they're like Boxer, the horse in Animal Farm that does all the work and thinks he'll go to heaven or something. In the military, for instance, U.S. military, people with IQs below 70 points are not allowed in the U.S. military because they're worse for everyone
they're
else.
Bad for like themselves and bad for others.
They're a net loss.
The
point of the study, I think, or the thesis is that stupid people are more dangerous than even the psychopaths, because stupid people enable the psychopaths often by voting for them. But I kind of like that framing. What else is in that section of the chapter?
Just real quick, remember. I'm going to edit some of this. I'm going to edit this out. But I saw this Rothmus, this tweet he put out. But now looking at his profile, I'm like, holy shit, he puts out so much.
He does. He's great, but he puts out too much shit.
So much. But he put out this tweet kind of that just... summarizes what you're saying with this whole democracy thing. So I'm looking for it, but god damn, I can't
find
it.
How does he put out so many fucking tweets? What the fuck is going on here? It's 22. He got like 20 tweets in 1 hour. What's happening?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So let me find
it. It's a great account, though.
What is it of? Can you tell me?
It's just this idea that just because everyone agrees that something is good doesn't mean it's good. It's that idea, but it's just this tyranny by majority thing. But where the hell is it? It was yesterday, up 25th.
There's a good one for anything.
I took a screenshot of it on my phone.
Democracy. Yeah, scroll up. There was something about democracy there.
There it is. Hold on. No, that's not even.
Democracy, a system that supports the notion that if an idea is popular with 51% of the people, then that idea should be forced on everyone else.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll put that part of you reading that in, Matt. But let me just find this one thing. It was yesterday. Here we go. No. Oh, yeah, this is another good one I saw today.
Yeah.
No. Goodness, I can't believe it's taking so long. It was just yesterday. There it is, right there.
Leo Tolstoy, wrong does not cease to be wrong because the majority share in it. No, like for most of humanity, the majority has been wrong about most things. Like, it's simple.
Muslim LGBTQ.
A meeting has been moved to rooftop.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's so bad.
Yeah. Anyway, where were we? I think
we were talking about Cipolla's laws of human stupidity.
Oh, yeah.
So my next question for you is, are we in the fourth turning right now?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That's the good men create good times. Good times create lazy men. And
weak men.
Weak men. Weak
bad
men.
Times. Bad times create hard, strong men.
Yeah.
Good men.
That's a good question. Are we in the fourth turning? We probably are. if the thesis is true, I would say that history does not repeat itself. It rhymes, maybe, George Lucas quote. Uh-huh. But and George Lucas got that from someone else, but I don't remember who that was. Anyway, if Bitcoin becomes the new standard, then I think the whole fourth turning thing is overturned. Like it doesn't apply anymore. It's more true in fiat times than
I was
on a Bitcoin standard.
Bitcoin breaks that cycle.
Yeah, it breaks that cycle. It does, because it provides you with something to anchor rationality to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but it's hard to say what turning we're in. It's like with all of these things. I wouldn't correct. It would be hard to categorize a person into stupid and intelligent and like. I mean, where would you put Biden? Where would you put Trump? Like psychopath or stupid? Like, I don't know. It's definitely not.
No, I think you were.
It's definitely not genius.
I think it's those four. Those four categories. One is like bad for yourself and bad for everybody else, and the other one is, what was it like? Like you're bad, but good for everybody else, or something. I mean, who knows? I don't know. Somewhere on there.
I think one's
definitely better than the other. That's my opinion.
Yeah. But I
definitely
think
prefer Trump.
Yeah. He's the least worst choice. He was the least worst choice, but that doesn't make him a good choice.
He was in the top 50% of options, I'd say.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, if you have to choose between a socialist and a crony capitalist, I'll take the crony capitalist any day.
No doubt.
It's like I'd take a stable coin over a shit coin or or a shitty fiat currency, but... I'd preferably, I wouldn't have to make the choice at all. I'd stick with the sats.
You say here that Bitcoin is the refinery that separates individuals from the sludge. Let's unpack that. Give me Dees Knut's take.
let's say that Bitcoin rewards virtuous behavior. So it rewards good behavior. It rewards people who work hard. It rewards people who take responsibility. It rewards people who have a low time preference. In other words, it rewards civilized people and disincentivizes barbary.
Last question I have for you for this episode. This transition, how it plays out. Do you think it's a good thing if it happens faster, or do you think it will continue to be slower? And is that a good thing? It allows more people to get on the life raft, kind of get some
exposure.
This is
a good question, a great question, because here I think I have a different opinion than most other Bitcoiners, because most Bitcoiners want a slow, smooth transition because they believe that will be less violent. But the way I see it, we are at war now. We are. If you're using fiat currencies, you're subject to violence already. So it can't happen fast enough, in my opinion, because we're, and I mean real hyper Bitcoinism, not like people buying shares in companies with Bitcoin on their balance sheets, or people keep custodial Bitcoin and paper Bitcoin and stuff. I mean real adoption where people run their nodes and like make this thing actually happen. Because Bitcoin removes violence from the equation. That's what Bitcoin does. So it can't happen fast enough. The more people that free themselves from the shackles of their self-proclaimed leaders, the better. And the faster the process goes, the better. You're in a violent situation already. And that's what most people miss when they want a smooth transition.
Spicy words from these Knuts.
Spicy words.
I think people are just used to the lube. I think that's, you know it doesn't feel quite as bad with the lube, you know, with the slow march of being debased over time. You know?
Yeah.
The money printer, if it doesn't go too crazy, people are just...
Bitcoin is lube.
Yeah. Oh man,
hyper lubrication. Yeah,
quite the transition. Thank you for telling us about your gender transition.
Oh yeah. Now we're talking about lubrication and transitioning. Yep.
All right.
We went there,
and we'll be back to do more in the final episode of our series as we recap everything. Thanks for listening.